Humankind is produced in association with WGBH Boston. This special documentary project, Resilient Nurses, is supported by the Compassionate Care Initiative at the University of Virginia School of Nursing and by the Humankind Program Fund.
You think that this is your calling and your career, and then you get into it, and it's much different than it appears. It's much more emotionally draining and physically hard, and you have to try and navigate and figure that out.
The high-pressure work lives of nurses who staff the front lines of our healthcare system. You're listening to a Humankind special, Resilient Nurses. I'm David Freudberg. With more than 6 registered nurses for every physician in the United States, nurses spend far more time with patients than doctors. Nurses are drawn to a role that provides comfort and care for others and that can make a tangible difference in people's lives.
I began my career about 12 years ago, and I think as any nurse gets into this profession, you sort of put on your superhero cape and you step off and you're ready to save the world, and that's exactly what I was going to do.
Chris Griffin is a nurse educator on the pulmonary unit at Children's Hospital Colorado outside Denver.
When you're in school, you go to clinicals and, you're around experienced nurses and they some of those nurses are burnt out or angry and you just say, I'm never going to be that nurse. And so I put on my superhero cape and stepped onto the unit, and I just took everybody's pain and suffering on. And within literally 2 years, I was almost completely burnt out. I definitely had compassion fatigue. I was on antidepressants. I was struggling as a new mom. I had 2 children of my own. My husband, who was very compassionate and very patient with me, our relationship was suffering, and really almost just left nursing altogether because I felt like I wasn't strong enough, that I didn't have what it took to be a nurse and continually give to other people.
In this program, we'll examine the substantial challenges of contemporary nursing and we'll consider some specific techniques nurses use to foster their resilience. Healthcare in America is projected to face rising demand. Baby boomers are reaching the age when people tend to consume sharply more care. At the same time, millions of newly insured people have entered the system, and a growing number of patients are battling chronic conditions from heart disease to cancer, diabetes to obesity. So the pressure on healthcare providers is mounting.
I can't explain how exhausting it is to be a nurse on an inpatient unit. There's a physical thing where you're constantly running. Our nurses forget to drink water during the day. Our nurses don't take bathroom breaks. Our nurses have to be almost forced to take a lunch break, which you can't imagine over a 12-hour period not meeting your own basic needs. But when you step away from the unit, there's that, what's going to happen to my patients while I'm gone? I know my patient the best. I need to be there. And so they carry that tension with them.
Chris Griffin and her colleagues work in a hospital where the patients are sickly children, sometimes very young. In addition, nurses must attend to the needs and concerns of anxious families in circumstances where the stakes are high.
I actually had a couple back-to-back incidences that really took me completely down. I had a mom who had her son was 9 months old, and we were pulling support from him, and she literally was holding him, stood up, handed him to me, and said, I can't do this. Don't leave him alone. I don't want him to die alone. And so she handed me her son. And that was 10 years ago, and I can still feel the emotions of that. And so I held this baby that I had just met literally probably 2 hours earlier and was with him when he passed away. And
he was in your arms?
He was in my arms. And a couple months later, I had a patient that I had grown really close to, and she was very, very special in my heart, and she had a surgery and was pretty fragile and had got an infection, and she also passed away not in my arms, but surrounded by, you know, me and her other nurses and her mom and her grandpa. And those two events back to back, I was broken. I had nothing left.
While the majority of nurses report satisfaction with their careers, at times it's a very heavy lift. Work shifts often run 12 to 13 hours. This prompted the American Nurses Association to issue a position statement in 2014 about the consequences of nurse fatigue. It cited risk for medical errors and reduced job performance, as well as drowsy driving on the way home. Marion Tinsley, a former social worker, has been a nurse for a dozen years. She currently helps to admit and prep patients for surgery at the VA hospital in Jamaica Plain, Massachusetts.
If you're doing 10 or 12-hour shifts, you know, it's brutal on your legs. You go home, you hear the cardiac bells in your head. I would hear that for like 2 hours, you know, driving home. I couldn't turn on the radio because I was still hearing the ding, ding, ding. It would drive me crazy. It took at least 2 hours for the dinging to stop in my head, you know. And then the numbness in my legs from standing up all shift or, you know, most of the shift. You know, I used to get a lot of, you know, mileage on my little pedometer thing on my belt. But, you know, it's like murder on my legs, though, you know. And I'm talking about a small area for the unit. But just walking back and forth all day, you know, all shift, you clock a lot of, you know, foot miles with that. But it's murder on your legs.
Given this kind of grueling regimen, nurses often strain to juggle the demands of work with the rest of life. Marion has a son who is 13.
For me, when I was doing floor nursing, it was like the whole guilt as a mom of, you know, going home and being tired after a full shift. And getting home after his bedtime. And working on weekends and, you know, trying to see if he can be brought up so I can at least do lunch with him. And, you know, so that stuff, and that adds to it. And, you know, it's the whole cumulative effect of, okay, I have to, something has to give. And that's what, you know, eventually made me decide that I had to leave the floor and go to the OR because, I went to the ambulatory OR eventually because that provided nights and weekends off, and I could actually participate in my own family. You know, I could actually be, you know, my son's mom, like on a regular basis, cook dinner, weekends.
And nurses can be challenged not just by the draining work schedules or the inherent demands of caring for people who are sick. The professional culture among nurses can also wear them down. And more American nursing is racially diverse, a factor that in certain cases can lead to friction within the staff. Marion Tinsley.
I always felt like there was a certain level of stress that you just have to assume is going to happen as a nurse. And so when it happens, you know, it's not going to break my day. What would really get to me was kind of like not having my coworker support, that type of thing, when stress was definitely escalating. That's just how it was because we had a pretty heavy floor. People were just busy. You know, I never felt that it was unrealistic to expect just supports, coworkers as well as, you know, beyond co-workers, management, and whatever else was, you know, was available.
I want to ask you if there have been cases of racial insensitivity that you have experienced among colleagues or perhaps even among between nurse and patient.
Now, I know that's definitely a hot topic. I cannot say no to it. I will say that. Not from the patient. I've never felt it from a patient or to a patient, honestly. I felt it colleague, definitely. As a black woman, it's not new. This is, you know, the fact that, you know, someone feels like they might be better than me, you know, simply because they're, you know, that I'm African American. And it's not that they know anything about me at all, other than what they see on the outside.
In today's rapid-paced healthcare environment, nurses dispense multiple medications, monitor high-tech medical devices, administer wound care, and engage in a host of interactions with vulnerable patients. Just keeping track of it all can be uphill.
We have many, many medications that we give, primarily intravenously through a central line, that we need to do sterilely.
Ashley Weber is a level 4 nurse providing bedside care in the Center for Cancer and Blood Disorders at Children's Hospital, Colorado.
We're working with severely immunocompromised people that if you don't prep, the insertion site with alcohol for as long as it needs to be, you could be introducing a bloodstream infection. Some of the medications we give, you'll read, the adverse side effects or reasons that we would stop a certain study that a patient's on and it's death. And that's most of the medications that we give and blood products that we give. You're just waiting for that clearing of the throat to be an indicator that your patient's going to stop breathing. And then when we're at home and we see a phone call from work, we think, what did I do wrong? Who did I kill? What medication did I not give? What chemo didn't go in right? And we're looking at patients that each have easily 15 to 30 meds each in a 12-hour period.
This is the neurology and neurosurgery unit of the world-famous Cleveland Clinic, a massive hospital complex which employs more than 11,000 nurses. One fact of life here is that the Cleveland Clinic has an exceptionally large load of high-acuity patients, often people who are critically ill and may be the hardest to take care of. And with recent organizational changes, many patients now transfer from the intensive care unit more rapidly than in the past and need special attention.
The staff on my units is doing more with less staffing. They're definitely feeling the crunch of, cost repositioning and cost effectiveness. Oftentimes there's no one at the desk to answer the call lights or the phones. There's a lot of stress between coworkers where, that's not my job, this is your job, and so the cohesiveness starts to break apart the more stress that they're under.
Karen Fink works at Cleveland Clinic as a board-certified holistic nurse and massage therapist.
Patient care nurse assistant may be called to see someone, but they're busy, and so they have a buddy, and then they have a nurse, and then the nurse has a buddy, and you get to the end, and no one can see the patient. I've been sitting at the desk charting, and I'm like, wow, I've had nurses who you'd never think would cry, who've broken down in tears right at the desk.
Because?
They just can't take in everything that's going on. So one of my units where the nurses are just starting to fizzle out, we've had two people leave just in the last week.
Wow.
Because they can't handle it anymore.
Time pressure is a near universal complaint today for nurses working in healthcare institutions. Unsurprisingly, this rushed rhythm tends to hamper a nurse's ability to make a calm, healing connection with needy patients. How nurses interact with patients has been a core interest for Dorothy Jones, professor of nursing at Boston College and longtime director of nursing research at Massachusetts General Hospital.
The nurse is trying to look at the patient, their experience, how they're responding to it, what the meaning of the experience is to the individual, and hurry up, move this along, is the outside caveat. And I don't know this patient. I don't know who they are. I'm teaching them in a very prescriptive way, but I don't know whether or not they've understood what I've told them. I don't know if their family understands what they've been told. I don't know how they're going to follow up when they get at home, because it's only the wife and her husband, and they're older, and who's going to follow whom in terms of care? They don't have children. They have nobody living with them. It just becomes very complex then for the nurse. And I think the added stress there is they don't see what happens next. They just are in the moment with the patient and the experience, and then they go. Patient leaves.
These problems are an all-too-common byproduct of how contemporary healthcare is structured. And the system is breaking down, According to Gene Watson, who served as dean of the University of Colorado School of Nursing in Denver, she's a highly respected voice for a more natural and caring approach to nursing and a passionate reformer of the current system.
It is still a very industrial model. It's product-driven. It's outdated with all the stresses of rushing, giving treatment, tasks, skills, meeting demands, being accountable for the medical technology and being accountable for the bureaucratic institutional demands, in contrast to being able to directly serve the patient as they are called to do. What's happening is to unravel that, and the system just keeps putting more and more pressure on them. So it's a very high-paced, high demand. That's compounded often with some of the difficulties of nursing itself. Nursing is hard on itself. Nurses are hard on themselves. They have a lot of pressures, and they also have high expectations. They're very perfectionistic. They want to do everything right. So there's a lot of internal stress.
Now, how about people who would say, but look, the person is sick. There are actual healthcare dollars that are being expended. There needs to be accountability in the system. There are errors. People are not necessarily always performing at the right level. What's wrong with feeling a little pressure to perform appropriately?
Well, there's nothing wrong with performing appropriately, but appropriate performance has to do with meeting the patient's needs and being accountable to the patient and all their technology and all their treatment and their demands, and being accountable for the safety of protecting that person, being accountable for the correct assessment of that person, being accountable to know what the context is and the meaning that that condition has for the patient so that they're working appropriately to address that patient's needs. When they are disconnecting, it's when they are just running in and robotically having to fulfill a prescription or fulfill a technology without even seeing the patient because of the rush.
And going too fast to pay attention poses a threat to quality health care. Research shows that beleaguered providers have an increased risk of using the wrong medication or making an inaccurate entry in the medical record. And that, says University of Minnesota nursing professor Mary Jo Kreitzer, may impact patient safety.
I think it can. If somebody is tired, or if somebody's on autopilot, I think it does increase the potential for errors. But it also increases the likelihood that that nurse is not going to be able to reach out and be perhaps as caring and supportive and empathetic to the patient as is desirable.
We're examining the challenges of nursing in today's stressful healthcare environment, along with some practical solutions. You're listening to a Humankind special, Resilient Nurses. I'm David Freudberg. If you'd like to obtain an audio copy of this program and learn about resilience for nurses, please visit humanmedia.org. When healthcare providers are overloaded, a consequence can be lowered levels of patient satisfaction. It can also aggravate worker burnout, and that's a real concern for nursing. A shortage of available personnel is projected to grow to hundreds of thousands within a decade. Some of this will result from a large cohort of nurses naturally reaching retirement age. But other nurses leave clinical practice citing an unfriendly workplace or emotional distress related to patient care or just exhaustion. Reverend Julie Swaney, head of chaplains at the University of Colorado Hospital in Aurora, counsels nurses in distress.
They're there for hours. They don't leave the unit and come back. They're there at the patient bedside interacting with patients and families. They're also in between the patient and the physician. And so there's always been a tension, and that's one thing. But when they've been working with a patient at the bedside for a long time, and then the patient codes or dies or has a very difficult time, nurses experience that. They're in a relationship with the patient. And so that becomes a source of stress in and of itself.
315 and 314 for a shooting at Century Theaters. They're saying somebody's shooting in the auditorium where Batman was playing.
Shortly after midnight, Friday, July 20th, 2012, a police dispatcher is fielding reports of gunfire at a cinema 3 miles from the hospital.
There's 11 LPI on the east side.
Somebody is still shooting inside theater number 9, current employee.
514, I need an ambulance to Exploring Sable. I need an ambulance to Exploring Sable.
514, copy.
A number of the patients came here through the emergency room and then were on our units. It involved many of our staff, many of our very experienced staff. A huge piece of the trauma was the volume and the pace. It was so much of it.
How many patients came in?
21.
With gunshot wounds?
Yeah. And, you know, they didn't just come by ambulance. They came by police car. They came by any number of ways into our emergency room. So, yes, there was a lot of that.
Needless to say, stressful for staff.
Yeah.
11, we've got the back covered and the south side covered.
16-6, we got another person outside shot in the leg, a female. I got people running out of the theater. They're shot in room 9.
Copy. We'll let rescue know. They'll start more people.
The repercussions of that event continue to play out for folks at University Hospital.
Reverend Lucas Novak is also a staff chaplain at University of Colorado Hospital.
I was covering the burn trauma unit and the orthopedic and rehab units. So the majority of those folks that were admitted were on those units. And I came on service when they were coming out of sedation. And so there were victims that thought they were back in the movie theater and were trying to crawl out of bed because they could see the shooter right there.
Healthcare professionals are trained to respond to emergency medical needs, but the events unfolding that night were enough to shake the staff at University Hospital. The shooting spree at the theater left 12 killed, 58 others injured. The accused gunman was a 24-year-old with a degree in neuroscience. He'd been buying up semi-automatic guns and thousands of rounds of ammunition.
Some of the hardiest and most interesting people I have ever met on that unit, seeing them so profoundly affected by the trauma of another was at once heartbreaking and humbling. You know, this one nurse that I had gotten to know quite well, and he was trying to navigate both the work stress of having multiple patients with very complex issues and needing to be in each room at the same time, as well as the trauma of here's somebody that is a teenager that was going to see a movie with their friends and was shot all over their body. And, you know, what do you do with that? And not only how do you enter that room to care for that person, but how do you stay in that room when everything about it is telling you, get out of here, this is too much. You know, for the patients, there isn't anything that I could have done in those days other than simply remind them you are in a safe place, that they are out of harm's way, that everyone around them is safe and caring for them. And then with traumatized families, you know, parents that didn't know which way was up, had never imagined having to make the kinds of medical decisions that they had to, you know, for the benefit of their child.
Everyone was anguished in the aftermath of the movie theater shootings. Although some nurses and other providers actually performed their best work in crisis, the extent of the tragedy left many staff members reeling. Chaplain Lucas Novak counsels providers.
Well, they share that they can't sleep. They share that they've had to reroute their way to work because they can't drive by the movie theater. They share that they can only handle so much or so many patients of a certain type, you know, victims of either gun violence or burns. You know, I've had nurses say, I can only handle car accidents. You know, I can't do anything else.
Because it hurts too much?
it hurts too much, and it reminds them too much. You know, I think seeing those types of cases reminded those nurses of how they were in that situation, of how flooded they were and traumatized they were. And I think that was too painful a memory of themselves to get back to.
So much of real healthcare is about how we engage suffering.
Hospital chaplain Julie Sweeney.
And nursing is particularly attuned to this. And to engage the suffering of another and means you have to engage the suffering in yourself. And some nurses are so able to tap into that in a really lovely, strong, courageous way.
What do you mean when you say to engage the suffering in yourself?
Before you take the patient's pulse, take your own pulse. To really be clear about what the nature of your own suffering is in the moment, whether it's made up of fear, maybe it's made up of uncertainty, maybe it's made up of a lack of a vision of the future, of what's where's this going, what's going on here. Some of our nurses were Columbine High School kids who are now nurses here. So, you know, there have been multiple traumas through the years.
So they were students at Columbine High
right.
when the massacre occurred there.
Right.
And they join a nursing staff
right.
at a hospital and see yet another wave
right.
of these horrible gunshot wounds.
Exactly, including being emergency room nurses.
Did those people need support and counseling?
Well, I'll tell you, the staff and the administration were incredible in terms of having, you know, setting people aside, saying, if this is too much, you can't do it. We had staff people whose family members were in the theater. We had staff members who were at the theater, you know, who weren't shot, but they were there. It had ripple effects. I would say that, you know, that adage that, you know, when something big happens to you, you have to tell it about 40 times before it settles down. They needed to say what all of their senses were assaulted by. They needed to talk about what they saw, what they heard, what they smelled, what they experienced, because it's all of your senses at the same time. And when you're aware of that and then you're aware of what's happening to you, you can locate yourself in a way that hopefully then you're able to then tend to the suffering of another.
Reverend Julie Sweeney of the University of Colorado Hospital in Aurora. You're listening to Humankind. I'm David Freudberg. Studio recording by Antonio Oliart Rose. Editorial assistance from Ken Rogers, Kathy Graham, and Mark Kilstein. Webmaster Brian K. Johnson. Special thanks to Amy Moon and Carmi, Sarah Banson, Art Cohen, and Tony Buck. Our program is presented by Human Media in association with Connie Goldman Productions. Program development provided by Chart Media.
To purchase a CD copy of this program, please call 1-800-5-LISTEN. That's 1-800-5-LISTEN. Or visit our website, where you can also obtain an audio download of this and our other programs and can hear selected episodes free. You can access free written materials related to this program as well. Our web address is humanmedia.org. Again, if you'd like to purchase a CD copy of Humankind by phone, please call 1-800-5-LISTEN, and our web address is humanmedia.org.
This segment, Resilient Nurses, Part 1, is Humankind Program Number 219.
The executive producer is David Freudberg. This is Humankind.
Coming up in a minute on the second half of Humankind, we visit with nurses who've identified common mistakes people make in trying to manage their stress, and we hear about a special Cleveland Clinic program called Code Lavender, which sends quick help if staff become distressed. When Resilient Nurses continues on Humankind in a moment. And we invite you to subscribe to our free weekly Humankind podcast on a variety of topics about what makes and connects us as human. Check it out. You can find us at iTunes. It's called Humankind on Public Radio. Thanks.